All right, when we last left off, we were in Mexico on a boat, having a good time. And I do want to note that I think a good time was had by all. I assume even those more interested in TikTok than looking up in the sky. I think it's fair to say that Mexico itself has a well-deserved reputation as one of the great places to visit as a traveler. It's still hanging in there, although the increase in population and urban development is, a little bit vexing. Yours truly traveled around Mexico pretty extensively on buses back when I was a college bum, which frankly was a long way away from the retired bum I currently am. But in truth, there are a lot of wonderful sights in Mexico, a lot of wonderful things to do. I've been very fond of the country over the years. And think that I must return to do Copper Canyon at some point in the not-too-distant future, once I am assured that nobody on the train is playing banda. But yes, the fact is, I think a good time was had by all participants down looking at the eclipse, and, you know, we were fortunate about the fact that we were able to see it. A lot of folks here in the United States did not see it at all due to thick cloud cover. Which is why, people, you have to check the weather, cross-reference the weather versus the eclipse path. And for those interested in seeing an eclipse in the future, we would point out that the moon's shadow will be next visiting the Earth and producing totality in August of 2026. If you want to take this in, you should be positioned in a boat off the coast of Greenland, not a likely location for most, or on a peninsula in extreme western Iceland, which is probably better odds, but the weather is still not going to be favorable, or in Spain, sunny Spain, which in some locations has a pretty promising prediction of cloud cover. And yes, you probably should start planning now. Mallorca will be getting an eclipse, by the way, off the coast of sunny Spain.
Home of Rafael Nadal.
Is it?
Yep.
I'll be darned. Which reminds me of an eclipse chaser that we stumbled into in our hotel in Mazatlan. He saw me with a shirt which he assumed was an eclipse shirt because it had a sun on it. It was not, in fact, an eclipse shirt, but he did have the right idea. And anyway, as we were walking by, this guy spots the shirt, turns to me and says, "Let me ask you, how many of these have you seen?" I said, "Well, for totals, I stand at 7, and if you throw in the 2 annulars, I guess it's 9. I'm not sure he got the whole part about annulars and started talking later about how his brother had seen 9, but was not really telling him that he needed to see it. He reported that when he saw the eclipse in Oregon, he went to his brother and was like, "Hey, what's the deal? Why didn't you speak up?" He said he thought it was because his brother was well-to-do and didn't want to make him feel bad about all the exotic places he was able to travel to. He said he expected to travel in 2026 to Mallorca and expected to be in Queensland, New Zealand for the 2028 eclipse, which you should also start planning for. That one will sweep across Australia and New Zealand. In between, there'll be one in 2027, which will go across the Straits of Gibraltar and wind up in Egypt and the Arabian Peninsula. There's lots of locations along that pathway that should be ideal viewing.
By the way, have you ever missed an eclipse due to weather?
The only cloud I've ever had to contend with in front of the moon and sun was the one in Mazatlan, and it wasn't too bad. Now, there was one in Siberia that had us biting our fingernails because there was a large puff of cloud hanging out below the sun and moon. But fortunately, they stayed apart. So I can happily point out that the weather has never spoiled my experience.
Well, you're a real lucky Pierre, aren't you?
Well, sort of, I guess. Anyway, as mentioned, after being screwed around with by Volaris Airlines, we had a rather uneventful trip back to the United States. The fear was that traffic would be terrible in San Diego and Los Angeles, and of course, it was on both counts. It is a little bit depressing to see how bad traffic congestion has become here in the Golden State in the last few years. There was a great break we got during COVID, of course, when people weren't driving, but man, traffic is back with a vengeance. Trying to work around traffic caused a couple of detours on the way back home, one of which involved driving into Westwood to kill some time. Now, it so happens that our regular contributor, Dr. Don Rose, is an inhabitant of Westwood, so we put a call into him to have him join us as we had a cup of coffee and killed some time to let traffic abate. Now, while waiting for Don to show up, a couple sat down next to us and revealed that they'd just checked out the movie Civil War. I gather the movie had just opened that day. It depicts a time in the not-so-distant future when the president is an authoritarian and in his third term. The extremely divided country is volatile and at war with itself. And of course, a movie like that's awfully far-fetched, isn't it? An authoritarian president in his third term? How could that happen? Maybe the craziest part of the movie, the plot of the movie, is that apparently Texas and California are aligned in seceding from the Union. I think one can imagine either one trying it, but it's pretty hard to imagine the two aligning. We may or may not check out that movie in the future for a discussion on this program. We'll see. But on a walking tour around Westwood, another movie popped onto our viewing screen. The movie was The Room, the movie that was written, directed, produced, and starring Tommy Wiseau, a rather unusual figure in the movie industry. And if you've never seen the movie The Disaster Artist, which is based upon a book that was written about the original making of The Room, starring James Franco, well, dear listener, we can't recommend it highly enough. It's a pretty amusing piece of cinema. And Don pointed out when we were walking around that we were supposed to see The Disaster Artist in this particular theater. There, however, was a power outage that night, and we couldn't do so. I didn't see it until I was on an airplane later that year. But apparently in Westwood, a couple nights out of each month, there's sort of a cult following where they play the original, The Room, starring Tommy Wiseau. And as we walked by, there was Tommy himself standing out in front with people lined up to take their picture with him. I'm not sure they were paying to take the picture, but apparently if you bought some of the merchandise, you were then entitled to get a picture with the star. I neglected to do this, but thought it would be a good idea to pull the movie up on Amazon and watch it, since my dear Elise had never seen it. I found it to be as amusing as ever, and in fact, at this point, I cannot resist playing a brief clip from it. Mr. McMillan?
Ready, camera has screen, and action!
What line? What is line?
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay.
Action!
What is line?
Take 13, action.
I did not hit her, Okay, line.
I did not hit her, it's not true, it's bullshit. I did not hit her, I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Take 67, action.
I hit her.
No, do you want to change the line?
You're doing great, man. We'll get there.
Action. Action! Action! Action!
I have to say it loud. I can't hear it in here. Say action so I can hear it.
Okay. Action!
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Get her!
I don't know. They say at the end of the movie, and I guess it's still true, that Wiseau remains an enigmatic figure whose source of funding, which was apparently bottomless, is still a mystery, along with how old he is. Anyway, after a stroll around Westwood, we elected to press on to stay somewhere out of the L.A. basin. We thought Santa Clarita would do rather nicely, getting out of the congestion. And in yet another example of how it is we all go wrong these days by Silicon Valley stepping in and finding corporations a way to fire everybody and use high-tech solutions to their employment problem, evidenced itself when I tried to call the hotel and make some preliminary arrangements to show up there. I got some sort of third party on the phone, which tried to get my name and address, which they did successfully, then tried to get my credit card number, which I didn't think was necessary, and I was quoted a price $140 more than what we'd paid on the way down. Now, I don't know if you've had the same problem that I've had, dear listener, but these days, if you try and contact a hotel to stay in as you're on the road, you sometimes thoroughly get the runaround, and I don't know. In some cases, I was unable to figure out how to get a hold of the actual hotel lobby reception desk to book something. I decided in this case that the solution would be to just forget it all, drive to the hotel, walk in, and talk person to person with the person behind the desk and see if we could get booked, which worked just fine. I was told by the con lady on the phone that there were only two rooms left. You know, you better book now. There's only two rooms left. I figured it was BS. I asked the clerk, how many rooms do you have available? He said, seven. When I pointed out to them that when I tried to make arrangements to call the hotel and someone was quoting me a price $140 more, he just said, oh, that wasn't us. It's like, yeah, I know, but don't you care about this? Actually, I didn't ask him that, but I should have. Anyway, in the end, there's something to be said for a person-to-person link. In fact, when I was handed that boarding pass down in Mazatlan and showed it to my friend Roger, he said, well, that's because you came down here and talked to a human being. And I said, yeah, that is surely why I'm holding this in my hand right now. There's something to be said for doing things the old-fashioned way. Speaking of doing things the old-fashioned way, Ms. Millen, I think we should inject some modernity into this narrative and do one of our old-time favorites, the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you say?
Why not?
All right. According to The Week magazine, it was a good week a couple weeks back for, I guess you'd say, high-tech solutions to problems, with the news that the Fairbanks, Alaska airport announced it will deploy a $70,000 robot that looks like a coyote or fox to scare bears, moose, and other wild animals away from its runways. Yes, folks, we're even using high-priced robots now to replace coyotes.
What, do you think you can train a coyote to do what that robot's doing? I don't think that robot's taking any coyotes' jobs.
Well, that may be true, sir, but as far as I know, the domestic dog has often been adopted to such tasks and does it pretty well without costing $70,000.
Well, it's a one-time payment, though, isn't it?
Well, I guess when you amortize the cost out over actually hiring a dog, maybe you'll eventually come out ahead.
As long as they don't come up with the robot roadrunner to factor into the situation.
As far as I can see, it's only a matter of time. It was, on the other hand, a bad week last week for Free Will, with the news that Turning Point USA head and MAGA influencer Charlie Kirk claimed that the use of birth control pills really screws up female brains, leading to, quote, very angry and bitter young ladies, unquote, who vent their resentment by voting for the Democratic Party. And no, we don't know too much about Charlie Kirk, but it seems pretty evident that his opinions are based on some pretty solid research. And it was an ugly week recently for, I guess you'd say, American politics, with the news that seven House Republicans introduced a bill that would change the name of Washington Dulles Airport to Donald J. Trump International Airport as a symbol of freedom, prosperity, and strength. It is noted that the bill is unlikely to pass, at least this year. And let's do a few items from the related Only in America department. Starting with the fact that two Maryland baseball fans are suing the Washington Nationals for age discrimination in the club's Millennials Ticket Discount, which was recently renamed the Young Professionals Ticket Discount. Nick Snyder, 40, and David Coyne, 58, alleged that by offering discounted tickets to fans aged 21 to 39, the team is violating the city's Human Rights Act and promoting the illicit stereotype that older fans are less worthy.
What about the senior citizen special at Denny's? Is that discrimination against younger people?
Well, I suppose you could make the case. How about this? As part of a mandatory course on, quote, structural racism, unquote, first-year medical students at UCLA were made to attend a lecture by a self-declared visionary who demanded that they chant Free Palestine and kneel to, quote, Mama Earth, unquote. Guest speaker Lisa Tiny Gray Garcia also blasted modern medicine as white science and denounced the occupation of Turtle Island, by which she meant the United States, said an attendee. It was crazy. And finally, Mississippi Christians have evidently erected their 14th giant cross. The latest, 120 feet high and 64 feet wide, towers over the town of Aberdeen and cost $240,000 in private donations. Mike Rozier, whose company is putting up the massive crosses, says it's money well spent, despite Mississippi's high poverty rate. People say Mississippi is number 40 or number 50 in this or that, Rozier says, but we're number one in the number of crosses. You know, though, that's probably true, especially the ones you burn on lawns. Now, while I was out of the country checking in on the news sporadically, I noticed that someone on the RFK Jr. campaign described the defeat of Joe Biden as priority number one, for which I guess she was fired. I hope so. Some do think that RFK Jr.'s choice for a vice president, Nicole Shanahan, age 38, a Silicon Valley lawyer and tech entrepreneur, likely spells doom for Joe Biden's reelection. Paul DeKinoy in the New York Post notes that she is really rich. Her divorce from Google co-founder Sergey Brin left her with an undisclosed portion of his $132 billion fortune. It's now noted that she can spend whatever it takes to smooth her ticket's path onto the ballot in every state. Shanahan's a lifelong Democrat, grew up poor as the child of a Chinese immigrant, and has supported radical left policies such as defunding the police. Some think that she is sure to leech progressive support from Biden. Some Democrats have believed that Kennedy might woo more voters from Trump, said Paul Begala in CNN.com. But by putting Shanahan on the ticket, RFK Jr. has left no doubt his campaign is a heat-seeking missile aimed at Joe Biden. Speaking of news, I did receive a phone call from a very worried friend while south of the border saying that Iran has just declared war on Israel and they've launched a bunch of missiles that will land there in the next, you know, couple hours. Well, I took a look and it turned out that Iran had not declared war on anybody and it had not launched missiles but rather drones. It's being reported that Israel shot down 90% of these drones, and I don't know, maybe it's true. We've had a very profound skepticism about their Iron Dome system of shooting down missiles because, as far as we know, you can't shoot down missiles. The U.S. has been talking about this strategic defense initiative since Ronald Reagan was president in 1983, I believe it was. And to my knowledge, we still can't hit a missile with a missile unless you put a tracking device on your target missile. Now, drones, they travel a little more slowly, and I suppose if you're planning correctly and you're really up on it, you might be able to shoot those down. I really don't know. If anyone out there is an expert on such military matters, please drop us a line at info@radioparallax.com and educate us. Something worth noting about this that I think my friend wasn't really up on, and maybe most people aren't up on, is the fact that Iran did this because Israel had launched missiles and blew up an embassy. It was the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, and they blew it up and killed a couple of Iranian generals. Do you think Iran was just going to let that go unchallenged? I do know that in the wake of all this, Israel was counseled not to overreact and respond against Iran, even though a lot of American Republicans would like to see us joining them and attacking Iran, contrary to all reasonableness and common sense. I guess up till now, up till this recording moment, they have not done so. I hope cooler heads prevail. I do note that in the wake of the continued assault on Gaza by the Israelis, Joe Biden called up Benjamin Netanyahu and urged him to call for a ceasefire. It's reported that Biden was very stern in making that demand. And, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu was even more stern in ignoring it. Anyway, I'm relying on most of these items on The Week magazine because it's such a great source of all sorts of data. And there's one little item I noticed in the April 19th issue that I need to jump on because we've talked about on the show before, the suspicion that mail in the U.S. is being delivered more slowly of late. The Week reports that NBCNews.com is saying that only 70% of mail intended to be delivered by the U.S. Postal Service within 3 to 5 days arrived on time last year. An 11% drop from 2022. Apparently, a $40 billion overhaul of the system ordered by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy has caused widespread disruptions, and state and federal officials are voicing concerns about the possible impact on mail-in ballots in the 2024 election. And, Louis DeJoy is still in charge of the Postal Service, the guy everybody was convinced would make a lot of mail-in ballots disappear in 2020, and which we suspect he did. I don't know. We've said it before, and we'll say it again, and we'll say it right now. Joe Biden was predicted to win the election by 11 million votes, and although he did win by 8 million votes, but there's a deficit there of about 3 million votes. Could that have been because the U.S. Postal Service just didn't get around to getting those ballots to where they needed to be? It's entirely possible. For more on that topic, we refer you to our archives for our previous chats with Greg Palast, who was pretty sure that there was all sorts of chicanery going on with mail-in ballots and urged people to vote in person. Again, comes down to that in-person touch, doesn't it? And since I'm staring down at my copy of the Week magazine, I feel obliged to grab a couple of quotes that appeared in it. You have to like Warren Buffett when he said, "Don't ask the barber whether you need a haircut." Or a quote from Irish writer Brendan Behan, who said, "A terrorist is a man with a small gun. A statesman is a man with a large gun." And finally, one from the immortal Mae West, who said, "Those who are easily shocked should be shocked more often." And although there's so much that could be said about Donald J. Trump, we need to keep that to a minimum, I think. I did note when I was out of the country, a report from our Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who went down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring of Donald Trump and announced that every American needs to be concerned about voter fraud and how illegals need to be prevented from voting. What really brought me up cold on that news report was Mike Johnson himself referring to the former president as President Trump. Mr. Windlass suspects that he may have been following protocol and being polite. I'm not so sure. And, it's hard to say whether that's a look into the future as perceived by Speaker Johnson. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is, but I'm going to leave it go at that. As we record, currently there are a number of rumblings going on here, there, and everywhere about the legal woes of former President Donald Trump. We certainly hope there will be some justice in all of this using our court system. But I had to note with some sadness that what happened on the first day of Trump's legal proceedings for the fact that he paid hush money to a porn star that he boinked while his wife was 8 months pregnant, and for which his lawyer served time in jail for making those payments. Well, at the moment, they're just having a hard time with jury selection. Because in America, we get to have a great circus of how it is you pick jurors. Because in the English system, instead of having people that know the law and study the law and are aware of how the law works, rendering decisions, we turn it over to 12 average citizens. And as this latest circus ramps up, one is reminded of the great legal circus of 30 years ago, the case of Orenthal James Simpson, who passed away last week at the age of 76. Of course, one thing that was demonstrated about the OJ case is that no matter how guilty you may be, if you can pick the right jurors, you're going to get off. So, we can see why the Trump legal team is being very cautious about who it is gets put into the jury box. Anyway, one sad thing about the passing of O.J. Simpson, if there's anything at all sad about the passing of O.J. Simpson, is the fact that we had hoped, rather forlornly, but we had hoped that Donald J. Trump would consider putting O.J. on the ticket as his vice president. Mr. McMillan is quite certain that O.J. would have turned down the offer because of, he's so busy continuing his search for the real killers. We had our hopes. I guess at this point we have to recommend to Donald Trump that for his vice presidential choice, he could do no better than to go with Ronald McDonald. And we can only speculate whether upon a second Trump presidency we would see Merrick Garland succeeded as Attorney General by the Hamburglar. Seeing the great job that Merrick Garland has done as Attorney General, I'm not sure we would do worse with the Hamburglar. But at this point, let's see if we can jump into a bit of science to end the show, because we always like science and it's always pretty upbeat, usually. Except, doggone it, I'm looking at my copy of New Scientist magazine, where it's talking about something that we have talked about on this program many times and puzzled over. The fact that even though the world is overpopulated and is bound to be, you know, destroyed, if we don't change our ways by the sheer number of human beings who are exerting pressure, shall we say, on our resources and producing lots of CO2 and methane while they do it, the so-called science of economics cannot figure out what to do about this. In fact, people keep complaining from the economist side of things that there's a huge problem in the world that birth rates are falling. They're falling too low. Population's going down, and that's a huge problem. New Scientist is quoting this sort of nonsense that we supposedly should worry about. 76% of the world's countries are projected by 2050 to have birth rates below the replacement level of 2.1, which is, of course, the number of children that must be born per woman to keep a population constant. And even worse, they're saying 97% of countries of the world by 2100 are predicted to have birth rates below 2.1. Why they imagine this to be a problem, we just can't fathom. Anyway, that's stupid stuff. Here's another science item I find much more entertaining. Evidently, ancient people, and by that I mean people who lived several thousand years ago, evidently discovered dinosaur footprints down in Brazil and thought they were pretty meaningful. So they marked symbols next to these footprints of ornithopod dinosaurs from the early Cretaceous period. Now, if you're a creationist, you might be entertaining the idea that the people and the dinosaurs were there at the same time. But we'd like to think that if you think along those lines, you're probably not listening to this show. And I don't know that much about planetary orbital dynamics, at least the math that's involved, but I do know that people have puzzled for a long time over how it was that Mars has these two small moons. They look like asteroids, and it's been suggested that they must be captured. They must have come into Mars's orbit and get captured, but apparently doing that is fiendishly hard to explain in terms of the gravitational interactions. Well, there's a current theory now that those two moons, Phobos and Deimos, may have been originally a binary comet pair that got captured by Mars, or perhaps a single comet that broke into two pieces. Well, maybe. I don't know how that solves the math, but maybe it does. There's a Japanese mission called Martian Moons Exploration set to launch in 2026, which will attempt to bring back samples of Phobos to Earth by 2031. Perhaps we'll know more then. And final science item of the day. I was asked many times in Mexico how it is that if the moon orbits the Earth and thereby goes on the other side of the sun and between the Earth and the sun, why don't we have eclipses every month? Which is actually a good question. And the solution to the conundrum is the fact that the moon and the sun do not operate in exactly the same plane. If they did, that would happen every month. But they don't. Therefore, to get an eclipse of either the sun or the moon, we have to have an interaction where that new moon or full moon, as the case may be, takes place near the time where the two orbits intersect, called a node. If the moon is not at the node where the two orbits intersect and it's between us and the sun, the shadow doesn't even hit the Earth. And therefore, there's no eclipse at all. Aww. And we could have said more about eclipses and probably should have, but we didn't. But, you know, it'll keep. It's something you could talk about anytime you want. And we are currently eclipsed by our running out of time. So let's bring this to a close and note that this program, like all of them, was produced by Edward McMillan. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. Our thanks to Guy for running this program at KDVS. Anyway, we have a pledge drive show coming up next week. Yours truly may or may not be in attendance. I hope I can, but I might not be able to. And for God's sakes, give generously to keep this station in operation. KDVS brings you wonderful programming 168 hours every week. Now it's turned for you to do your part, dear listener. Please give what you can. I'm Douglas Everett. Talk to you soon.